Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the premier radio networks, including our new channel, XM244, on Saturday, May 11th, 2013. This is episode 977. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by ShareFile from Citrix. Try ShareFile today for a 30-day free trial. Visit ShareFile.com, click the radio microphone, and enter Tech Guy. And by 99designs, the world's largest online graphic design marketplace. 99designs connects businesses seeking quality, affordable designs with a community of 200,000 graphic designers. Visit 99designs.com/techguy to receive your free design consultation. Hey, hey, hey. How are you today? I'm sorry, is my erector set getting in your way, Heather, there? Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. We can move that. We can move that over out of the way. Yeah, that's in the way. 88. I have. We were talking about. It's hard to explain. We were talking about toys of our youth and how, in the geek world, most geeks got started in the geek world in some way by some sort of technology like this. And this goes back pre Lego. This is, they called it an erector set. It's a. I don't know how you would, but we built something with it. That's actually one of our interns, the 22-year-old Jeffrey Needles, built that. And it's quite an amazing thing. It works. It's got a motor in it.
It picks things up.
Yeah.
Nice.
Meccano is the name of the British company that owns them now. They're pretty cool.
Excellent.
But I'm sorry it's in your way. So can you, Alex is going to remove the tractor. He's going to use his tractor beam. And
that little hook looks like it's going in your lip is all.
I know. It's not a good place. Heather, looks like the lines are empty.
They're blocked right now.
They're blocked. Unblock. Okay.
Unblock
this is it.
The lines.
Release the hounds. Unblock the lines.
Exactly.
8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, if you want to talk high tech, call Heather Hamantaschen and she'll answer the phone. And I'm going to call you that from now on.
All right.
Because you remind me of a nice poppy seed cookie.
Oh, is that what that is?
You don't know that, yeah.
That's horrible because I assume it's a German thing and I should know.
It's Jewish. It's a traditional Hamantaschen, are the traditional cookie of Passover. I think I can't remember.
We'll look into it. It
anyway. Release the hounds. Open the lines. Take the calls. 888-827-5536. We're to talk high tech. Now that could mean computers, and I know that's the first thing that leaps to the mind. However, Purim. Sorry. Thank you, Randy Pinball, in our chat room. It's Purim, not. On Passover. The happy festival. We could talk about internet. We could talk about cell phones. I'm certainly, it's funny when, I've been doing this show since 1991. 22 years. And by the way, today is a auspicious day because on this date in 1998, 15 years ago, I abandoned radio for TV briefly. Had a brief fling with the thing with pictures, when we launched on this day in 1998, it was ZDTV at the time, became Tech TV, and for 6 years, we were a cable channel for geeks, and it was pretty important, you know. But back then it was computers, and then in 98, I guess internet was starting to take over. It was the first iMac. Steve Jobs came back to Apple right about then. The first iMac came out. Windows 98, of course, came out in 98, right? The Department of Justice sued Microsoft about a month after we launched for monopoly. those are the days. 15 years ago was a different time. Tech TV lasted 6 years and then was sold to Comcast, which gutted it. And the channel, which became a gaming channel, is now the Esquire channel. I don't know what that means. It was G4, and then now I guess that failed. I know we made a difference with Tech TV because I meet people all the time. In fact, we've got somebody in the studio wearing an old ZDTV t-shirt. He's visiting us today from Laverne, California. He's the city attorney down there and a longtime Tech TV watcher. He and many others come to me all the time and say, you know, it's because of you that I got into technology, or you made it okay to be a geek in the late 90s when it was still a little embarrassing to be kind of into this stuff. All of a sudden, there's a national television channel full of geeks. And I meet young guys all the time who said, I grew up watching tech TV, became a programmer or got into the industry or web designer. So there was something, there was a reason to do that. I'm so glad we did it. And I never stopped doing this. You know, a brief fling with television, but I came right back because radio is really where it's at. 8888 Ask Leo, because we can have a conversation. We can talk. So computers, the internet, cell phones. When I first started doing this, of course, cell phones meant Motorola, you know, flip phones. Actually, in 91, they weren't. I don't even think there were. It was very rare. We had them, but they were very rare. It's only people like city attorneys and mayors that had them. And driving around in their limousines, radio phones. Remember those? But now everybody has. Even if sixth graders have cell phones everywhere. And smartphones now are more than half the market in the U.S. That's a big shift. That just happened. Still, almost half of all cell phone carriers in the U.S., you know, people who use cell phones are using the old, what they call, they're dumb phones, but they call them feature phones so as not to insult them. But more and more people are carrying iPhones and Android phones. I see more and more Android phones in the wild now. iPhones are still the thing, in fact, they're more than half the market, but Android's taken off like crazy. So we could talk about that. That's a big change. I didn't want to talk about phones when it was just feature phones. But now that they're really computers in your pocket, the phone I carry today, the Galaxy S4, it has 8 cores. This is higher end than my desktop computer. It has 2 gigs of RAM, an 8-core processor, dedicated graphics. Its screen, even though it's only 4.7 inches, is 1920 by 1080. That's crazy. It's a high def screen. So we can talk about all of that. If you have a question, you want to buy a cell phone, a smartphone. We could talk about home theater. In fact, our home theater guru coming up, Scott Wilkinson at 33 after the hour. Talk about big screen television, surround sound, all that jazz. Anything on your mind, if it has to do with tech, I would love to hear from you. 888-827-5536. 888-827-5536. A lot of talk these days about Windows 8. We talk about it a lot. You know, I reserved judgment until I used it for about 4 months, and I still have to say, after that, trying desperately to make it work, to like it, I just can't get into it, and I guess I'm not alone. Microsoft blogger just wrote a blog post saying, hey, stop. People like us. They really like us. Stop bashing Windows 8. It's not that bad. Frank X Shaw in the official Microsoft blog said, hey, it's not like soda pop. Pay no attention to those fringe journalists who are just trying to gain attention by bashing Windows 8. Those fringe journalists he talked about, the Financial Times and the Economist. Oh, yeah, they're definitely out of the mix. let's pause for a moment, says Frank, and consider the center. In the center, selling 100 million copies of a product is a good thing. It's true. Microsoft announced this week 100 million copies of Windows 8 sold. And, you know, hey, if I were selling 100 million of anything, I'd be pretty happy. However, that number it needs to be parsed a little bit. It doesn't mean there's 100 million copies on people's desks. It means that they've sold 100 million licenses to equipment manufacturers who may never use them or may never sell the computers on them. And I don't think you can die. I really don't. He says, Windows 8 is a good product. I don't know if he's saying it in that tone of voice, but it sounds like, you know, when you write, when the vice president of corporate communication, actually his full title is corporate vice president of corporate communication. Apparently he works for the Department of Redundancy Department. He's the corporate vice president of corporate communications at Microsoft, Frank X. Shaw. When that guy is writing something like Windows is a good product and it's getting better every day, I have to say it sounds a little, Windows is a good product and it's getting better every day. Unlike a can of soda, he says, A computer operating system offers different experiences to different customers to meet different needs while still moving the entire industry toward an exciting future of touch, mobility, and seamless cross-device experiences. I'm going to add here parenthetically, whether you like it or not. This is, by the way, exactly what the vision for Windows 8 was. Touch and cross-device. And apparently people didn't really buy it. What do you think of Windows 8? Let's talk. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. It's pretty. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's summertime. 8888 Ask Leo is the number. I didn't mention, but the Tech Guy website is Tech Guy Labs. TechGuyLabs.com. And it's a great place to go. It's free. I see all this all the time. People charge for their website or charge for their podcast. Everything's free. We have great advertisers. They foot the bill, so you don't have to. Everything's free. And the website has all the questions and answers as we give them. James DeRuvo's writing them down. But also, there's a link there to the chat room. And if you're interested in joining us in the chat, that's always a lot of fun. Usually quite a few people in there. It's heavily moderated, so it's relatively safe. For youngsters.
You can send their children there.
You can send your children there. We kick people out pretty freely if they're mean.
Apparently.
Mean people, get out of our chat room. But always, always welcome to join us. If you go to techguylabs.com, you'll find the link there. Heather, we got a call. Are we ready to go? Get this show on the road?
Yeah, I'm interested in Carlos in Brooklyn. What's that all about?
What's that all about? Let's find out. Carlos Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Carlos.
Mr. President, great to talk to you again.
I am. Heather doesn't know this, but I am officially the president of the internet, having won an election which was completely stacked, completely rigged some years ago. And I thought my term might have run out, but in fact, I found out it's for life.
Oh.
Yeah.
Are you also the president of your fan club?
I don't have a fan club, but I do have the internet. So I'd almost rather have the internet. Thank you, Carlos. For your fealty and homage. What can I do for you?
All right, Leo. Okay. First of all, I built a new computer, and it's awesome thanks to the people at PC Perspective.
Oh, yeah. That's our friend Ryan Schrout. Does a great website, PCPER.com. So you used his hardware leaderboard to build it?
Exactly.
Which one did you build? Because they have four. They have, the Dream Machine, the Budget Machine, and a couple in between.
Oh, I mixed and matched the high-end and the Dream System.
Oh, so you must be a gamer.
Exactly. I have 32 gigs of RAM, just for the heck of it.
There's no reason in the world. Actually, RAM's cheap. Why not? But 32 gigs. Okay. I'm getting the picture, Carlos.
All right. So I'm okay with spending a little money, obviously. So I'm using an HDTV as my screen right now, which does not cut it. What I want to do is I want a nice HD monitor, and I want to set up a dual screen setup where I can have my TV to put certain games on the TV and just use my regular desktop function on a normal monitor.
So you want to do basically what is a multi-monitor setup, dual monitor, one regular monitor, say a 27-inch for day-to-day work, and there's lots of good choices. How big do you want your gaming monitor to be? You want it to be an HDTV?
I have the HDTV. It's 32 inches, which is fine because I can play that from my bed. And from that distance, it's perfect. But from up close, I can't play an MMO type of game.
No, because televisions are actually lower resolution than computer monitors. They only have to be 1080p, 1920 by 1080. And, for instance, I bought a 30-inch display from Monoprice that's 2660 by... I think 1620. It's a very high resolution display, but it's 30 inches. It's smaller. So, but on the other hand, if you're sitting at a desk, 30 inches takes up, as much of your peripheral vision as a monitor when you're in bed and 10 feet away from it. So, I don't know of televisions that are getting, there are 4K televisions. In fact, since you mentioned PC Perspective and Ryan Schrout, he actually bought a $1,500 4K TV, which is about the only thing I could suggest as an answer to you.
But that's far too expensive right now.
No. Well, it's $1,500. It's amazingly cheap.
But see, what I want, I just want a regular nice monitor so I can play MMOs up close and then use my TV. I'm going to mount it up in the wall. And when I play other games, I can just, you know, lay on my TV or have XBMC.
Well, any TV will do it. This Seiki is 3840 by 2160 for 50 inches. So what I'm saying, So what I'm saying is this is, and he, if you go to PC Perspective and you look at his videos, he's got an unboxing, he's got a display, he's going to review it. I mean, this guy is really, since you mentioned PC Perspective, taking a look at this, and he's getting, I think, pretty good results with what is essentially a television set, but a 4K television set. So it's twice the resolution. Seiki, S-E-I-K-I. This is the, I mean, this is probably the one I would look at. Although, like I said, I would follow Ryan's review and his pros and cons on it. It's kind of hard to believe. And this would be appropriate as an HDTV. $1,299 at Tiger Direct when he bought it. Although, I guess it's gone back up to $1,500. Watch for sales, in other words. Because, you know, this is kind of, what? Well, what? Now you're talking on this, a big screen, a 50-inch screen, suitable for putting on your wall, but still more than adequate for high-resolution gaming. This is just the beginning. This is just the beginning. I think you're going to see more and more of these as the 4K display becomes popular at home. Anyway, that's, you know, Carlos, the problem, most, right now, almost any TV, HDTV will work because most video cards, and I'm sure the video card on your new high-end gaming rig, have HDMI out. That means they can put out 1920 by 1080. No higher. But they can put out 1920 by 1080 over that HDMI. Somebody's saying in the chat room that the Seiki, thank you, Mr. C-U-K, is 30 frames per second, 30 frames per second refresh rate. And that's true of all TVs. They're 60 fields, 30 frames. It's a TV. So, yes, I think that's adequate. But some gamers want 100 frames a second, 80 frames a second, whatever. You won't be able to do that. It's a television. I think it's going to be a very interesting time for gamers who want the full experience. And don't forget, we're starting to see things like the Oculus Rift. Have you seen that, Carlos? That's kind of interesting. This is a helmet you put on. And it's a virtual reality helmet. So you have two screens in front of you. And when you turn your head, it's just like you're looking somewhere. For a shooting game, it's just like you're looking around in the environment. And then you still use the mouse or the keys to move around. You got to be careful. It's a great way to get seasick very, very fast. But so, frankly, for me, a lot of these games, if you watch them on a big screen, the first time I started using my 30-inch monitor with BioShock Infinite, I had to stop. I said, I'm a little queasy. I'm going to take a break. But you watch, you know, gaming is what's driving this industry. That's what's interesting. It used to be, you know, operating systems were too challenging for the hardware, so we had to improve the hardware. You know, spreadsheets were really nothing we can throw at computers these days comes close to using their technology to their limits, except gaming. So all of the advances will be to support gaming. That's where it's all going to happen. Oddly enough, so if you're thinking Carlos, woo, You're nuts? No, thank Carlos, because he's the guy driving everything forward. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scott Wilkinson is our home theater guru. He joins us each and every week at this time. First of all, you weren't here last Saturday because of the Renaissance Fair, or Ren Fair, as the baggy tight crowd calls it. How was it?
It was great.
Good.
Fantastic. Had a wonderful time. Great wonderful. Weather, as it is today. It's about, they're, you know, my compatriots in the Queen's Own Band playing Sackbut and Sham and what have you are out there marching around in the dust all day today. And I'm kind of glad not to be doing that, but it was fun to go and visit.
Are there any recordings online of the Queen's Own Band?
I don't know if they're online or not. We did do a CD. This was quite some time ago. You know, the quaint old, I mean, it's like almost a Renaissance technology, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you should have done an 8-track for real authenticity.
I know.
Well, how fun. I'm glad you did that, and I'm glad you were able to take a little time off, but we're glad to get you back. Now, we were talking with Carlos in the last break. He wanted to do gaming on a very, very high-res display, mm-hmm. and I said 4K TV, and he said, like anybody would, oh, that's out of my budget, but it's not if you take a look at this Seiki. Now, I don't know how Seiki is doing a 4K display for $1,299, but apparently they are.
They are. List price of $1,500. And it was quite a shocker to all of us in the industry, really, yeah. because up till that point, we were seeing, you know, 84, 85-inch TVs in the $20,000 to $40,000 range.
And so what do we give up for this thing?
Well, CNET actually did a full review of this Seiki TV, and you can go to reviews.cnet.com and look up the model number is the SE50UY04. Someday I'm going to do an article about model numbers.
Yeah, it's horrible.
They make no sense whatsoever. Horrible. But in any event, it is the first what we call UHD, ultra high definition, which stands for 3840 across. 3840 pixels across by 2160 pixels up and down. it's four times the resolution of high definition, what we now call high definition. And $1,500, you know, is it any good? Well, CNET didn't really think so. The picture
now,
quality is pretty poor.
I got to point out, there's no content really unless you buy some special Correct. Hard drive-based content. So really, the only market right now for this is games. Games is the only stuff that'll push that many pixels.
That's correct. Games and your own photographs.
Right. If you take, you know,
if you take digital
quality,
photographs, yeah, you know, right. then you probably have 4K at least or more.
Right.
So that's really the only content you're going to see these days. YouTube is starting to stream 4K. We're not sure how good that's going to be. So, Netflix is thinking about it.
So my question is, when they rate it as poor quality picture, is that for watching movies or is it good enough for a game? I mean, remember, a game is not exactly, you know, real life.
No, that's true. And in fact, CNET said that really the only thing this TV is good for is gaming.
Right. Well, that's what
so
I would expect.
So your previous caller would be well advised to look at this TV if you want super high quality, super high resolution. Now, somebody in the chat room pointed out, and rightly so, that this TV can only accept signals up to 30 frames per second. And I'm not a gamer myself, but I've heard from gamers that higher frame rates are a good thing.
Yeah, well, they are with more action, any kind of action, right?
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Smoother action.
And it's certainly true with video. You want 60 frames per second. You had said in response to him that most TVs only accepted 30 frames per second. That's not true. I will correct you there. They can accept 60 frames per second.
Not 60 frames, 60 fields.
No. 60 frames.
60 frames progressive?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Who's doing that?
Everybody.
So in the early days of television, you had interlacing.
Correct.
That was the I in 720i, 1080i.
And 1080i
interlacing meant that they were sending 60 fields, but each field was half of a frame, alternate lines, and you would
Correct.
Unite them into a frame, giving you an effective frame rate of 30 frames a second.
Correct.
But that was
correct.
A broadcast standard. I presume broadcast
correct.
Is still doing that.
Correct. Right. That is exactly correct. Broadcast is still doing that, except for channels like ABC, Fox, ESPN. They broadcast in 720p, so they're broadcasting in a progressive 60 frames per second
okay.
with a lower resolution than 1920 by 1080.
They can't do 1080, they do 720, but that
they
still looks good.
They can't do 1080p
in fact,
in
given
broadcast.
The choice between 1080p and 1080i and 720p, would you prefer 720p?
Well, in the broadcast world, given the choice between 720p and 1080i, I would prefer 720p.
As would I. Progressive
because
is better.
It's better because it's sending the entire frame right. all at once. If you send only half the frame, as you described, at one point, and then the second half of the frame, and you interlace those lines like you described with your fingers, you can get artifacts. You can get jaggies and stair-step right. artifacts and so on, which are much less evident if you send the entire frame in a progressive manner as they do in 720p. Now, Blu-ray players and other devices at you know in your home, in terms of source devices, can send 1080p at 60 frames per second.
Is that the maximum? Do they send any higher?
No.
That's it?
That's it.
Okay.
That's it. And in fact, that's one of the problems with this new Ultra HD, because at 2160p, which is what this will become... HDMI, the connector between the source device and the TV, can only send up to 30 frames per second. It can't send 60 frames per second until HDMI 2.0 comes out. And that's not going to happen till maybe later this year. And then manufacturers are going to have to put new chips. That's going to require new hardware for HDMI to be able to sustain that high data rate. And so all the TVs you buy today, this is one of the big problems and sort of the one of the secrets of UHD or these 4K TVs these days, they'll only be able to accept 30 frames per second. They will never be able to accept 60 because it's not a firmware update. It's an actual hardware update.
So this isn't a failing of the Seiki specifically.
No.
Any 4K display would have this problem.
Any 4K display today.
Until we get an update to HDMI.
Until we get an update to HDMI, or until the manufacturers decide to implement DisplayPort instead of HDMI, which I don't think is very likely, but DisplayPort today can sustain 4K at 60p, at 60 frames per second.
And the reason that's an issue is because if you're gaming, you probably would use DisplayPort as opposed to HDMI, and you would be able to send a higher frame rate with the game, but that Seiki would say, I don't know what the heck this is.
I don't know what the heck that is.
Give me HDMI at 30 frames or nothing.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
All right. Exactly. I haven't tried gaming at 30 frames. I'll have to try it. You can artificially set your games to any frame rate, so I'll try setting it to 30 frames a second and see what it looks like.
I will be very interested to hear what you think about that because I myself am so not a gamer.
Yeah, but 30 frames in video is fine. I mean, a movie's 24 frames a second.
Well, yes, yes. However, when you go to the movies, you are seeing something at 24 frames per second, but you are also seeing something called double and triple flashing. Now, before you get on me to say, oh, how do, you know, what are you doing there? That's pornographic. No, it's not. It's taking each frame and displaying it on the screen two or three times, flashing it on the screen two or three times. That greatly reduces the what's called the judder. If you just played 24 frames per second, one frame and then another at 24 times per second, the picture would look pretty jerky, particularly with a lot of fast motion. And so they do things called double and triple flashing. And which is what LCD TVs do. You know when you have an LCD TV that's 120 hertz or 240?
We got to run, Scott.
Oh, we got to run.
Thank you, Scott Wilkinson, home theater geek, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number, 888-827-5536. Our next caller comes to us from Cincinnati, Ohio. Taylor on the line. Hi, Taylor.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call. Big fan of yours.
Thank you.
My question is, I have an iPad 3 with Verizon 4G card in it, and there's a message I've been getting on here lately. The message is labeled cellular data plan usage, and it's just a notification message comes up. It says, there's no data remaining on your current plan. Would you like to add more data now?
Yeah.
And it gives you options now or later.
I see that every month.
Well, so I called Verizon on it.
Yeah.
Because when I hit later, my 4G card don't work.
But right. You've hit the limit.
It's already activated.
You've hit the limit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It says it's already activated. I called Verizon. I says, I looked on my account. I'm nowhere near my limit. And they're claiming it's a Apple problem. And they said they have a ticket in with Apple. Do you know anything about this, or you heard anything about
this? No, this is the first I've heard. So you have, how much, a 2-gig plan? How much did you pay for?
I'm actually up to a 10-gig plan, because I use this thing like no other.
Yeah, pretty hard to use up 10 gigs unless you streamed video all day, every day.
Right. And I do stream video, but not that much.
So you're looking. So my question to you is, where are you looking to see what your usage is? On the iPad?
No, I actually log on to Verizon's website.
All right, yeah, because that's one thing I found. I took my iPhone international, and I bought 100 megabytes of data or whatever it was internationally, and I was keeping an eye on it on the phone, and then I called AT&T, and they said, well, the phone isn't accurate. You have to ask us. So that is one piece of advice is don't follow what the data usage is on the tablet or the iPhone, because the ultimate authority is the carrier. But if Verizon's telling you, so they said, oh, it's Apple's fault, did they then reactivate your account?
No, they didn't do anything.
That's Verizon's fault then. I'm sorry. I don't care what they say. How can they say that's Apple's fault?
Right. Well, the other thing is they're not even claiming the error message is theirs either. They're claiming it has something to do with Apple.
I see. So they're saying we're not blocking you. We're not sending a message saying you've run out of room. The iPad is doing that by accident.
Right. Right, and that's what they're claiming. And my point to them is, well, I'm not going to continue paying for service if I can't use it.
No kidding. And I, you know, have you looked on the Apple site to see if others are having this problem? Have you checked their support discussions?
I have a little bit. I work for the local city government. I'm an IT guy with them, and they have a whole bunch of corporate iPads issued out too that I help take
care
of.
So that should give you a little clout with Apple.
Yeah, so I've been going through work and different stuff like that, and nobody's really discovered an answer yet. I mean, I've noticed people are having issues. We're having issues across the government. You know,
well, that's Apple's got to fix that because, frankly, that's a big market. Government's a big market. This is the first I've heard. Murray on Travel in our chat room said, I had the same problem. It comes and goes. Boy in the chat room said, and this is why we have the chat room, says, I've had the same problem with Verizon. Web2910 says, I have the same problem. IO Geek says, I have the same problem. He says, I just ignore it. The data plan still works without renewing, but you haven't had that experience.
Well, for the most part, no. I mean, there are occasions where I'll ignore the message and I'll be fine. Or, you know, in other experiences, I'm on Wi-Fi anyway, so it doesn't matter. So, yeah, I'm puzzled, truly.
Yeah, and you know, the problem is you can visit the Apple support site. Apple's kind of notorious for ignoring these problems, and even if people complain about it, killing their posts. So just because there's no post on there doesn't mean there isn't a problem. It could just be it could just be Apple saying, these aren't the droids you're looking for.
And
this isn't the bug you're looking for.
Right. Verizon said Apple don't normally address small issues like this, so wait.
It's not a small issue. What do you mean small issue? That's a massive issue. You're not getting what you paid for thanks to a bug.
Right, and they said they normally don't fix the bug by itself. They'll wait until an OS.
Right. That's true. They very rarely do an individual fix. But how long has this problem been happening?
Oh, shoot. Over a month now?
My point, exactly. They just pushed out 6.1.4 to fix a bug.
Right.
So, hello, Earth to Apple. I don't know what to say. That's terrible. I'm glad you called.
Well, the other thing I want to say is you mentioned PC Perspective. I contributed Ryan Trout's Indiegogo.
Tell us about that. So Indiegogo is like Kickstarter. These are sites, and there's a lot of them all of a sudden, where people who want to do something can raise money, and they go to the public and they say, I'd like to do a movie, I'd like to do a book, I'd like to build something, but I don't have the money to do it. If you donate, I'll give you some sort of prize, some, you know, a T-shirt or whatever. What is Ryan doing?
Ryan, he offered many things. He offered the lowest benefit of one was you got a Skype call.
Ryan's. But what does he want to? What does he want to do? What is he trying to do?
He's trying to improve his studio.
Oh, that's right. And, he's trying to compete with me. Videos. That's right. I forgot. He told us about that last Sunday on This Week in Tech. Yeah, he's building. He needs what, $30,000 to build a video streaming video studio like ours.
Right now, his goal is only 10. He's almost hitting 20.
Awesome. I told him, yeah. I said, you know how much we spent on this one, Ryan? $1.25 million. When we built this studio, my CEO said, and I sat down, we looked at the numbers, we said, we could probably do this for $350,000, 10 times, more than 10 times what he's spending. We thought, so we saved up $350,000. By the time we were done, we had a campaign, we raised $250,000 in bricks. We borrowed $500,000 from the bank. It was a non-trivial thing to do. His is not quite so fancy, of course. And I encourage Ryan. I encourage Ryan to do so. If you search for Indiegogo, Indiegogo, and you and PCPER, you'll find his Indiegogo project. You can support it, and we'll put a link in the show notes too to the Indiegogo. Ken's got it on our chat room. If you're in the chat room, PC Perspective Video Set and Production Equipment.
Yeah, he's up the road from me, so I contacted him. I said, I'd love to come up and visit and help out.
Yeah, he's in, now see, I get this wrong every time. He's in Kentucky.
Florence, Kentucky.
I said Tennessee the other day, and since he's a big KU fan, he was a little perturbed.
Yeah. All right, Leo, thank you. I appreciate you taking
Thanks,
my call.
Thanks, Taylor. Appreciate it.
You have a good one.
You too. Take care. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. George in Santa Monica, you're next. Hi, George.
Hi, Leo. As you know, as we get older, our eyes have a problem, you know, and I would like to change my chat room page screen to look like yours because it's got a black background and white letters. I can read that perfect.
Yes.
Is there any way I can?
So we run a chat room, which is wonderful. I'm sorry, KU is Kansas. See, I did it again. Thank you, Ajidade. It's UK, Kentucky. Oh, yeah, yeah, I'm in such trouble.
You're in trouble.
You can't mess with this college hoops stuff, man. They get on your case. Holy cow. So our chat room, which I love and I'm a big fan of, we make it very easy by simply going to our website or irc.twit.tv, and you can use the web-based chat there. But okay. But I prefer to use, and we're using right now, a standalone chat client. That's a program. They're free that will run chat. You have to put – the only trouble is you have to put in the settings. But we have the settings there on the page at chat.twit.tv. And and if you put in the settings, and then you can go into preferences and you can change the colors like crazy. So on a Mac or a PC, I very much like XChat. On the Mac, it's called XChat Aqua. I also use Textual, which is not free on the Mac. On the PC, XChat is great. Merc, M-I-R-C, is another good one. So all of this information is available at our wiki, too, as well. wiki.twit.tv. And it's nice. You can invert the colors. You can make them black on white. You can make it big text. I'm older as well, and I like big text.
It's like readability.
Yes. You know, love readability.
I do, too. I use that all the time. And I want to use your chat to look like you have on yours. And
yeah. Well, that's why we do it, because we're putting it on video. And if we make the text too small, you won't be able to read it at all, George. So that's why we do that. Readability is great. Browser plugin that my eyes breathe a sigh of relief every time I use it. Takes all the ads, the cruft out, makes it nice big text. Love it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, everybody. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, and Google Glass. We can talk about that, too. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the number. 888-827-5536. Did you see the Saturday Night Live last week, the parody of Google Glass? So Glass is the, I don't know what to call it, the thing from Google that puts a it's like putting on a pair of glasses, but there's no lenses, so it's just the top part of the frame, and in it is embedded a screen, a little teeny weeny LCD screen that you over your right eye that you can look up into, and it looks like a screen as you look up into it. Google says it's something like a 25-inch display 3 feet away. Yeah, except it's not. It's like a little tiny LCD screen about an inch from your eye is what it is. And it looks just like that, kind of low res. It's dark until you either tap your temple, or if you've set it up this way, you tilt your head. you know, you jerk your head a little bit, and then it says, okay, glass. Or it says, glass on, and then it says, in quotes, okay, glass. That means if you want to command me, say, okay, glass. Incidentally, if somebody notices you going like that with your head, they can say, okay, glass, and it will work. So they haven't quite figured out that part yet. Anybody around you can say commands to the glass. So you tilt your head or you tap your temple and you say, okay, glass. And then it gives you a list of commands. There aren't very many. You could say, take a picture, take a video. You have to say it exactly as it says on the screen. That's fine. You're looking at a menu. You can swipe your temple to go back and forth through cards that show where you are, the temperature, various things like that, information, news. It's exactly like the skit, by the way. When I saw the skit, I thought, it can't be that bad. And then I tried them, and it's that bad. It's goofy. It's goofy. But it is cool. We got a pair of glass. I had ordered it last year at the Google Developers Conference. In fact, I got my special $1,500 paperweight that signifies that I've registered Google Glass. And finally, we got the email. But it wasn't me. It was one of our hosts here, a host and producer who went down in my stead last year to the Google conference. And so I could get it from him, but I'm going to let him use it because he has a newborn, about 2 weeks old. So Jason Howell's going to have our glass, and he's going to take lots of pictures of his kid. And that's pretty much what it's for, taking pictures. And every picture has one same unique perspective, your right eyebrow. On the other hand, one thing it's good for, and the pictures I've seen of babies are fabulous, because the baby does not see a camera. The baby sees mommy or daddy. And my friend Gina Trapani, who has Google Glass, has her daughter Etta is 6 months old, something like that. So Etta now knows what mommy looks like and smiles when she sees mommy. So the pictures that Gina is getting of Etta, her baby, are fabulous because the baby sees mommy and smiles. And mommy just happens to have a stealth camera on her head that she can get a picture of it. So it works well for that. The idea is it'll be what we call a heads-up display, right? Something that you can have running all the time, see what's going on, and participate in it, in various ways. Eventually, and I would love to see this, although privacy concerns may prevent this, I'd love to see it if I look at somebody, it goes, oh, that's Heather Hammond. She pronounces her name Hammond. Don't you dare say it wrong. She works as your call screener. And information like that.
It tells you when to say happy birthday,
yeah,
et cetera.
Yeah, it's her birthday. Say happy birthday. Glass, order flowers, that kind of thing.
Glass. How many days has Heather worked on the show? 5? Thank you.
Yeah, exactly. It's good for stuff like that. And I could see it be useful. For me, it'd be useful because I'm an old guy with no memory. I'd say, oh, I see who these people are and blah, blah, blah. I remember their I can't remember people's names. Stuff like that. It'd be useful. Anyway, we had some, Heather, and I'm sorry. I'll bring it. I will bring them in so you can try it. I'd love to get a normal person's opinion of it. You're kind of a geek. You're not a normal. I take it back. You're not normal. Who's next? Who should I talk to next here?
Well, we have to talk to Tom and Brea, because like I said, I've been here 5 times. I've never heard anyone say this.
Tom and Brea, surprise me. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thanks, Heather.
Hey, Leo.
Hey, Tom.
Great talking to you. I've been watching you way back tech TV times and all that, so I never thought I could get in. But it's an honor to be able to talk to you. I've learned a ton from you.
Thank you. I mentioned at the beginning of the show, this is the 15th anniversary today of the launch of Tech TV, May 11th, 1998.
Wow.
And, yeah, 15 years. A lot has changed.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I was driving around today, and I heard you say that you have problems with Windows 8. And I've been reading how people are, Windows is thinking about changing it and putting a start button in and doing all this. And I'm just confused because I just love Windows 8. I just think it's great.
All right. Let me ask you a couple questions. Had you'd used Windows before?
Always used Windows.
Okay. So that to me, if you'd never used Windows before, it might not be as confusing. What do you like about Windows 8?
Well, to me, I'll tell you, when I first saw it and heard about it, I hated it just reading the reviews because I thought I was going to have to touch everything. I'm a big desktop user. Right. I have a business and always use desktops with that. And I thought, I'm not going to be reaching across the screen and touching tiles and doing all that. But when I started to, and I'm a geek at heart, I just, you probably turned that and made me one of those.
It's my fault, huh? Blame Leo. Yeah,
well, I love it because I hated calling tech support and getting the answers in the old days of, well, you have a virus, you need to reformat and reinstall on every tech issue you ever had. So
right.
I said, that can't be, so let me try to learn this stuff. Plus, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I love computers, and I love Windows. I think Windows 7 is the best version ever. Did you get a computer? Let me ask you what you got. Did you get a computer with a touchscreen or not?
No, I didn't.
So you're using it kind of like the old Windows, mouse and keyboard.
Absolutely. That's how
all
I
right,
use
it. So here's the big, and I'll tell you the problem that I think people with mouse and keyboard have. Figuring out where to move the mouse for the charms, you move it to the lower right corner for charms, upper right corner for something else, upper left corner. How long did it take you to figure all that out?
About 30 minutes.
And once you figured it out, you're comfortable with it.
I love it. I mean, and the thing that, again, I've walked through stores, you know, and I'm one of these guys that I'll go to a big box store and I'll see somebody, I'll hover around somebody so I can try to help them.
Good for you. Good for you. That's great.
And so I was seeing a guy and he was talking about how he didn't like Windows 8. And I said, what is it you don't like? He said, well, the tiles. And I said, well, you want a desktop, you just hit the Windows key.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden they just light up and they go, wow, really?
Do you live in the desktop on this? Do you ever go to the start screen? Do you use Metro apps?
Oh, yeah. It launches into that.
Yes, the start screen. So a couple of the differences from Windows 7. You still have a desktop, Windows 7-style desktop, but there's no menu button. If you hit the Windows key, it'll take you to, instead of a start menu, a start screen. Which looks very much like the Windows Phone screen. It's tiles. Sure. They're live. They show pictures of your friends, weather, stuff like that. And then you can tap or click a tile to launch an app. There are two kinds of apps, which is one of the other sources of confusion I find. There are, for instance, there's two versions of Internet Explorer on your new Windows 8 machine. There's a desktop version and what they used to call Metro. Now they call it Modern UI, a full screen version that's really more suitable for touch and tablets. Do you use both?
I can see where that could be a little bit confusing, but really what I do is I customize. I tell people that the start menu is like a big start button that you customize.
Right.
And you can set it up however you want.
Right.
Again, I own a graphics company, so I put all my graphics software in a little section that has that all sitting there ready to go. And so it just easy runs with that. But the other thing that I don't think people realize is how, and this is one of the best features about it.
Well, hold on, because this is a good time to break. Coming up, Tom, with one of the best features of Windows 8, right after a word from our sponsors. Thanks for the help with the tease. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We'll be right back with one of the best features of Windows 8. Show today brought to you by, we'll get back to Tom, and we will get back to Tom because I want to finish that call. But I do want to also mention one of our sponsors for the podcast. We have separate podcast sponsors from our radio show sponsors, and I love mentioning ShareFile. First of all, it's from a company that has been a big supporter for our podcast since almost day one, Citrix, and of the radio show, I have to admit, since day one. ShareFile is Citrix's response to how to collaborate, how to share files at work. Now, you've heard me say, do not send attachments. That's a really bad way to share information with colleagues and clients. We all do it, but I'll tell you why I say it's a bad idea. First of all, it's how viruses get spread. So it's a bad idea to get people used to that because one day an email may pretend to come from you with a virus attached, and they'll go, yeah, he always sends us attachments. So that was the first reason I started saying no. But now also, there's the issue of security. Sending an attachment is just like sending a postcard. It's wide open to all the servers along the way, and usually there are many who could look at whatever you're sending. It is not secure. And finally, nowadays, we're sending large files. One image from my camera is too big for many people's mail inboxes. I'll get bounce backs. So ShareFile's come up with a very nice solution. It is designed for businesses. I know there are consumer solutions like this. This one's for business, and it gives you and your clients and your customers and your colleagues a very business-like experience. You customize your ShareFile page with your company logo. It's branded. They don't have to sign up for some weird account and something to get it. They could just open it up. They get a link. The link is a download. ShareFile just makes it so easy. It's also good for you because it's secure. It's encrypted every step of the way. You can add password protection if you really want to make it more secure. You can tell ShareFile says you can only open this once, twice, a dozen times, unlimited. You can only open it for a day, a week, a month, a year. You really control access to these files. It also puts all these files in the cloud. I use a ShareFile desktop app that syncs my ShareFile folders to the cloud. So that means my files are always there. And then I can use a tablet or smartphone app and just say, hey, if I forget, because I often do, send that file along. Anyway, I'm going on and on. Go to ShareFile.com. Click the microphone at the top there. Don't click the big green try it for you, the microphone that says radio listeners. And use the offer code TECHGUY, one word. And you can try it for free for 30 days. That's the best way to do it. The best way to share files in business, ShareFile.com. Use the offer code TECHGUY for 30 days free. But do click that microphone at the top there. It'll make it a lot easier for you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. We were talking with Tom. Hey, Tom. Oh, wait a minute. I have to pick him up now. Hey, Tom. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I did a mean thing to everybody. I said, and now Tom's going to tell us the best feature of Windows 8 after this message.
Well, I hope I meet that expectation, and it is.
Hey, you said it, man. It's the best feature for you. Let's put it that way.
I think one of the best features is the search. Because when you go to the start, when you're in that start menu, you can just start typing something.
Oh, I do like that.
And that is awesome because it doesn't have, it can be anything, an app, a file, a doc, a picture. Right. And it will, you just start typing that word and it will tell you every one of those four file types that search word it contains. And there it is. And I lose stuff all the time.
I agree with you. That's one of the nicest features. If you're on the start page, just start typing. Now, you could, by the way, do that in Windows 7 if you hit the start key and you got the start menu up. Then you could start typing as well. So this is much better. I mean, it really does have a much more complete search. You can also do that from the charms. Another thing I find confusing is that the charms bar, which slides in from the right-hand side, is context sensitive. So it has search and settings, but that relates to whatever is on the screen, full screen. Right. So it took me a little while to figure out if I wanted to change the settings for an application I'm running, I need to use the charms bar, slide in the charms bar, and then that settings button applies specifically to this application. Do you use full screen applications, Metro style applications at all?
Just again, because I like eye candy so much. I mean, I love the news and I love the mail.
The news is beautiful.
Yeah, and mail is also awesome as far as with that when you look at those things. So I like both of those. And another feature that I just, again, because I use Office, is and you brought something to mind when you're saying that you get two of the same thing, which is confusing, and I'd have to agree with that. But one of the programs I use is OneNote. And there's a OneNote app for Windows 8, and then, of course, I have a little
right.
Tile.
There's a desktop app and a Metro app of
correct.
Note. Right,
OneNote. And the interfaces aren't exactly the same. I mean, it looks beautiful in Metro, but I can't do
See,
the same
that
thing.
That drives me crazy.
Yeah, and me too. Me too as far as with that. It's like I wish they would sync up and use them both, because I'd use the Metro version all the time is what I would use for that.
And I am telling people at this point, get Windows 8. If the interface ends up confusing you, there are things you can do. I've mentioned Start 8, which is a $5 program from Stardock that puts the Start menu back. Microsoft, some people have thought Microsoft's going to put the Start menu back there, but there's some noise that the next version of Windows 8.1 Blue, which will be out in the fall, Microsoft has kind of started finally talking about it, and they haven't confirmed this, but we believe that they will add boot to desktop back, which means you'll go, instead of seeing the start screen, you'll go right to desktop. And then concurrent with that, they would put a start button back, but that's not a start menu. That's merely a button when you're running in desktop mode where the start menu used to be on Windows 7 and previous versions that you tap to get back to that full screen. They're not going to ever get rid of, I don't think, of that full screen of Metro apps. And my problem with it, Tom, and I'm glad that it doesn't bother you. My problem with it is it's a hybrid. It is both a tablet touchscreen operating system and a desktop operating system.
Yeah, didn't the CEO from Apple or something say it was like Microsoft trying to make a toaster that washes clothes or something like that?
He did, and that was Tim Cook, and that's disinformation. I don't buy that either. But I think it's a challenge. Microsoft, you know, if we would have criticized them if they hadn't added touch features to it, right?
Well, absolutely. And to me, you know, Microsoft, I like Microsoft. I'm not trying to promote them so much. I mean, I also run Linux and I do all that. I just built a Linux server that I'm having a blast.
Well, you are a geek.
To figure out how to do it. Yeah. I sort of am. And to me, Microsoft, they work so hard to try to be all to do all, where Apple people, it's kind of like, you know, you buy an Apple machine, you use Apple products, and that's all you're going to do. And guess what? They work, and they work great.
No, that is very much the distinction, and it's becoming clearer and clearer. Windows and Mac has always been that way. Windows is highly configurable. You know, we'll support everything in any way. Apple is our way or the highway.
Yeah.
It's true also on mobile. iOS, very much Apple tells you how you're going to use it. And for a lot of people, that's good. Android, it's like anything you want to do, well, you can do it. That may make it a little confusing. Maybe too many choices for some. I'm glad you like it, Tom. I don't mean to imply that nobody likes it. For sure, if you've sold 100 million of something, somebody likes it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's just, and I know you, Leo, I know that I don't know how you do your life, because you've got every OS, every operating system in the whole world that you use. It's like, I wonder, when you get up in the morning, you got to write a letter. How do you do it?
Yeah, it could be any one of 100 different ways.
Absolutely.
But I love that, and that's my job too, right, is to try them all. And I was just disappointed. I really wanted to give Windows 8 a try. Now, what I didn't do and what I don't do is, you're using it as a desktop operating system primarily.
Yes.
And those people, like Paul Thurrott of our Windows podcast, Windows Weekly, who does the same, those people seem the most happy with Windows 8.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can kind of get used to it in such a way that you're really pretty much still living in a Windows 7 style environment with a few extra features.
And it takes 30 minutes to learn. See, that,
right.
I guess that's the thing that bothers me, is that if you invested about 30 minutes into, you know, learning some of the features, you know, watch a couple of YouTube videos on people using it, man, you've got it licked, and you really, you get all these options, which, you're right, you it's very configurable as far as what you want to do.
Right.
And if you know, some people don't like that, they just want to hit the button and go.
I've been waiting for you to call, or somebody like you to call, for some time. Thank you, Tom.
You're welcome.
I appreciate it.
You.
See, somebody likes Windows. Windows 8. I warn people, though, because I want people, when they get it home, yeah, maybe Tom's advice is the right advice, which is give it some time, try it, give it a chance, and maybe then you will like it. It certainly was inexpensive when it first came out, just $30. I'd be very curious to see what Microsoft does with the next version, Windows 8.1. But having said that, and I have a very nice Windows 8 laptop, this Acer S7 is touch screen, it's beautiful, it's lightweight. It is not, you know, as Tom said, when I jump up and I want to run an email first thing in the morning, this is not the first computer I would go to by any means. You know, if you have a choice, there are, in my opinion, there are better ways to go. 8888 Ask Leo. Guess who's coming up? Johnny Jett, our travel guru. He's back in town. We're going to get a little travel advice using technology to save money, to travel better. If you like to travel, Johnny's a great guy to have. More of your calls coming up, too. And we put all of the stuff we talk about on the show in our show notes. That's up at techguylabs.com. You'll find a link there to the chat room and to many other wonderful resources, including previous shows, audio and video. My answer, and if you would, if you have a better idea, or you just want to get on there saying, Leo, you're wrong about Windows 8, it's great. Love to see us 100 comments. 100 comments on that last call where you tell us what you think of Windows 8. That makes it more valuable. And as I said, always free. TechGuyLabs.com. TechGuyLabs. You'll say hello to Heather Hamantaschen, who is answering. How late did you stay at that show? You're not exhausted.
No, I knew I had to be here today, and I didn't want
to
be a wreck.
Right, exactly.
Maybe 9:30.
Yeah. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Johnny Jett. He's the travel guy, joins us every week when he's not jetting around. Where are you today, Johnny?
I'm in L.A. My wife just landed. That's why I'm wearing the Canadian shirt.
Do you greet her when she gets off the plane with a little Canadian flag waving it?
you know, I try and better her up.
Natalie still lives in Toronto, but that's how you get the frequent flyer miles, isn't it?
Yeah, we commute, but we usually meet somewhere. Isn't that, you know, sweet? Overseas.
Yeah, you just had a great trip, I know.
We did, Monaco and Paris.
Wow, wonderful.
And we got some good ones coming up.
Well, where are you going next?
I can't tell you. You're going to stay tuned or follow me on Twitter or
part
Facebook.
Part of the game. Where in the world is Johnny Jett? So what do you want to talk about today?
All right, I got a couple of good things.
Yeah.
One, I don't know if you saw the partnership between Clout and American Airlines this week.
I did not. Now, Clout, okay. KLOUT.com, is a place that gives you clout if you are very active in social media. And the more active you are, the higher your clout rating.
Right. And a lot of people say clout means nothing. And, you know, I'm neutral on that, except now if you have a clout score 55 or higher.
I do.
You can get into an American Airlines Admirals Club for free between now and July 31st.
Finally, something that makes clout worthwhile.
And that doesn't, regardless if you're flying American Airlines or not. And they have
what? 37 at. Yeah, what? I don't even need an American Airlines ticket. What?
According to one of the articles that I read, but, you know, there's 37 Admirals Clubs.
I'm reactivating my Cloud account.
Yes. And actually, where you are in SFO, Cathay Pacific also, or I don't know if they still do it, but last year they announced users with 40 or higher, which is not very high, can get into their lounge, but they have to be flying Cathay.
Wow. So I should really be paying more attention to this. Now, my clout is pretty high because, you know, I'm the tech guy.
You're the tech guy.
How do you get a high clout score, though? I mean, is 40 high?
It's not that. Mine's 79.
Whoa! Johnny Jett. But that's you're active on Twitter. You're active on Facebook.
Exactly. So, you know, not that I don't think 55 is that difficult to get. I think my wife's at 54. No.
All right. So, but you do need to, it's through your Twitter and your Facebook.
Yes. So that's a great one.
That's a good deal.
And I don't know if I mentioned before, but we can do it another segment because I got some other stuff to talk about. But, you know, I get into these clubs, the American Airlines Club and the Delta Club, using my American Express Platinum card.
So getting into clubs is nice because you don't have to wait with the hoi polloi. What is it? See, I sit here in the gate and I'm just looking at all the people who relaxed and they show up just when the plane starts to board. I figure they've found some secret spot. What is it about these clubs? What's in there?
Well, usually there's free Wi-Fi.
Free Wi-Fi, okay, I like
there's,
that.
There's snacks. Depending on the club, there could be free alcohol. I mean, there's definitely free drinks.
Who has the best club?
Lufthansa's first class lounge in Frankfurt is unbelievable.
I have been in that one, actually, yeah.
They drive you to the plane in a Porsche or a BMW.
I like it. I didn't get that one. I walked. Okay, that's good to know.
I don't know if you're in that Han lounge. It's
I wasn't in the first class lounge. I was probably in the
Business class.
Business
totally different.
Lounge, yeah.
I mean, it's nice.
They don't drive you in a Porsche, though. Wow.
And it's tough to beat, you know, the Middle Eastern Airlines and the Asian Airlines. I love Hong Kong, Cathay Pacific. I love Emirates, Qatar's, Etihad's. I mean, Air New Zealand here at LAX is pretty good. Anyway.
So it's worth it. And how do you normally get in these clubs? You pay it. Do you have to buy something?
If you have a business class ticket.
Not always. I've had business class tickets and gone to the club and they said, no, you can't come in. Maybe they saw me coming.
Well, it depends where you're flying. International, for sure.
It has to be international. Okay.
But you can also buy a day pass. American Airlines and a lot of the other airlines, you can buy a day pass for $50. So if you're on a long layover, it's worth it. And that's one way. But
international is nice because sometimes they have showers and you can kind of freshen up.
Oh,
and,
for sure.
Yeah.
Before I get a long-haul flight, I always take a shower because then, you know, when I land 15 hours later, I look somewhat presentable.
Right.
But, you know, I told you every Friday I host a travel skills Twitter chat. And we usually talk about technology. And this week it was about inflate technology. So I thought I'd ask you a couple of the questions and we could talk about it.
I noticed one thing, by the way, that the FCC has decided to start to put a much better technology in in-flight Wi-Fi so that we get higher speed in-flight Wi-Fi.
Well, one of the questions is, do you use Wi-Fi, in-flight Wi-Fi or not?
I sometimes do. It depends how long the flight is because it's, you know, it's not cheap. It's you have to buy it unless you have a coupon or something. But I've used GoGo Internet on Virgin America on long flights, and it's nice.
Oh, yeah. I get all my work done. So when I land in a destination, you know, I don't have to go run and check my email. So
we should point out, it is, despite the fact that FCC implies it's not usable or they're going to get more usable, it's pretty usable.
For sure. Yeah. I don't, I mean, some people download stream.
You can't do Skype calls.
No, you can't. And that's another question, by the way. Should passengers be allowed to use their cell phone or Skype calls in flight?
No.
I say no, but I think people are mixed on this, which is really surprises me. Why do you want people yelling on a plane or having these crazy ringtones just disturbing, you know, takes the joy out of flying. And I think it's going to happen. Unfortunately, I think it's going
to
happen.
The number one thing to bring on a flight, and if I don't do this, I freak out, is I don't use noise-canceling headphones. I use in-ear headphones. I use Edemotics that seal out the sound. Because I don't care if somebody's getting calls or if it's just a baby behind me. I don't want to hear a thing. I want silence, and then I'll listen to some nice music. That makes a big difference.
So which ones do you use?
No, I don't use – I don't like the – everybody uses the Bose, you know, noise-canceling.
Yeah, I have Beats ones that are noise-canceling.
Are they Audio-Technica? What are they?
I don't know.
Yeah, there's different – Audio-Technica is good, and I have a pair. But
Beats.
Yeah, yeah, I use in-ear monitors that you jam deep into your ear from a company called Edemotics, and that does as well as noise canceling. It seals it out.
How much are they?
They're cheaper. They're 100. They start at 100 bucks, I think.
Oh, good. Will you tweet that or something so I can check it out?
Yeah, I'll tweet it over to you. Maybe that'll help my clout score.
And then you get into the lounge for free.
Yeah.
So, but one of the questions is, what do you think airlines can do to make in-flight entertainment better?
You know, I'm a little weird on this one. Give everybody an iPad. If you don't have one, don't you notice fewer and fewer people are watching the little screen on the seat in front of you? They're bringing their own devices and they're watching movies and playing games on their iPads. That seems to be the trend, isn't it?
You know, I don't like the handheld. I'd rather have it in the seat back. That way I don't have to sit there and shuffle and try to eat my meal and holding my iPad or whatever.
All right. Then they should give us special iPad holders in the seat back so I could put my iPad there.
Well, some airlines actually do. They rent them out in coach. You know, I flew El Al to Israel a couple years ago, and they were renting out the sets. Sometimes on first class in some airlines, you know, they hand them out instead of having it in the seat back.
Right.
And also, but I think what the airlines need to do is have more travel shows about the destinations. I think that's one thing that
I would watch
lacking.
That. I would watch that.
Because there's there's so many. I think they do a good job. And they also need a lot more power ports. I mean, it means
everybody agrees on that.
Yeah. On the long flight, have a power port means everything.
Yeah. Over. Yeah.
And how about, do you prefer using a boarding pass, paper, or mobile?
You know, I've used mobile and I feel weird doing it. So I just give me I print the boarding pass the night before and I just have
it. I actually do both, and I tell you why, because it's nice to have the mobile, but a lot of times the TSA's machine will be broken and they'll say, you know what, you got to go all the way back down.
Exactly.
And print it up. So I always carry a paper one in my back pocket.
Yep.
And I've had to use it a couple times because
of
that.
That's good to know. Very good.
And my last question for you, Leo, do you always turn your cell phone off in flight?
Well, I just saw a survey that says 30% of travelers do not, or at some time or another. And I, you know, I think turning it off for me is turning the screen off. I don't shut it all the way down, no.
I shut mine down.
You're a good man. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. If the plane goes down, blame me. We're not gonna take it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Johnny Jett's website is johnnyjett.com. And that Twitter thing he does every Friday is at noon Eastern time. Noon Eastern time on the Twitter. His Twitter handle is at Johnny Jett. You'll see his questions if you follow him. And then he asks that you use the hashtag TravelSkills, #TravelSkills. As you respond to him so that everybody could follow the conversation. But he asked an interesting question, and I think that this is something I'm curious what you think. Lately, and it's only happened in the last few years, on the announcement they said, make sure that your phone is turned off completely. Now, what I do, and I think I'm not alone, and by the way, your laptop is shut down completely. Your Kindle is turned off completely. I think most people think that what that means is if you push the button, the on-off button in your phone, You tap it, the screen goes off. That's off, right? That's not what they mean. They mean shut down the computer, go to the menu and shut it down, press and hold the power off button on your iPhone or your Android phone until you get the slide to power off or the tap to power off, and then fully power it down. That's what they're talking about. Do you do that? See, I just put it in airplane mode. One of my options is airplane mode. I tap that. That turns off all the radios. And then I just tap the on-off switch, and I consider that good enough. Maybe a pilot will call us and explain to us why that isn't. I think those rules are about to change. The FCC has been looking at that. It's really interesting to see people go crazy in the chat room. Somebody in the chat room just said, when you leave your stuff on, you're being distracted during the safety announcements. No, I'm not. It's in my pocket. It's more distracting to press and hold and wait. It's in my pocket. Hey, I'm sure we'll get some calls. Certainly, I am not advocating that you break the law. Follow the instructions of your flight crew and pilot to the letter. John in Michigan, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, John.
Hey, Leo, how are you doing?
I'm very well. How are you?
Great. I love your show. I listen to your podcast all the time.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Hey, I'm going to take pictures of a reunion, and I wanted to use Google Plus and send a group of people the photos, and I wanted them to be able to add their photos to my album. Is that possible with Google Plus?
That's an interesting question. Yeah, they're in a transition right now. The original web sharing app was Picasa Web.
Right.
And then they started doing it so that if you were using Picasa Web, now you're using Google Plus, not Picasa Web. You can still, there's still a link that says go back to Picasa Web. Picasa Web does let you create public folders.
The problem was Picasa only gives you 1 gigabyte, and they're saying Google Plus gives you at least 5.
I hate you, Google. I hate you, Google. So what they're doing is this is Google putting all of its might behind its failed social network, Google Plus.
Mm-hmm.
I like Google Plus. I'm with you. I think Google Plus is a great way to share photos, but it's not as good as Picasa Web. It's not as full-featured as Picasa Web. And why they would say, we're not going to give you enough storage on Picasa Web, use Google Plus. I don't know. This is a good question. Can you make a shared album on Google Plus? Let me see. Upload sharing settings. Only you, limited. I don't see a way for others to upload to your album.
Okay. Do you know of any other sites that would do that, even if you had to pay?
Oh, yeah, there's tons of sites. Flickr, for instance.
Okay.
So what you would do on Flickr, which is free, the Yahoo site, Flickr.com, is, and most people have Flickr accounts, they have Yahoo accounts, they just maybe don't even know they have Flickr accounts, is create a group for the reunion. Reunion, this is what I did, in fact, for my my college reunion.
Is there a limit to the size?
No. Okay. There's a limit per user to how many people, how much you can upload per user. But no, and that's a small limit.
And can they add their pictures to that?
Yeah. So the way it works is I take some pictures, I upload them to my Flickr account, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I add them to the group. So the group has no real limit. You see, it's the individual's limit. So, I'll look. I have a group somewhere of my Yale reunion from 19 whatever. Oh, I guess I deleted it. It's been long enough now.
Okay.
But we have a good example would be the tech guy group where we have 3,000 pool photos. We have something like 9,000 members. You could just do that. And then it's a pool. Now, the disadvantage is people have to have a Yahoo account. But that's no different than them having to have a Google account.
Okay, because I know, like, with Google, you send them a link, and then they can just go right to it.
You know, another way you could do it, and this is maybe more than you wanted, is use Google Events, Google Plus Events.
Okay.
Because then you have a shared photo, automatically have a shared photo pool.
Oh, okay.
So that's see, the thing with Google is somebody in the chat room said Google Plus isn't failed. It's absolutely failed. People use it. I'm not saying people don't use it. And there are a lot of hundreds of millions of people have Google Plus accounts. But it's no Facebook. It's no Twitter. It's not the place people, you know, a few people go there to use it. But it's not become the vibrant community Google wants it to be. So mm-hmm. what they're doing is they're throwing their marketing might behind it. They're saying if you create a Gmail account, you create a Google Plus account. You know, they want you want to share photos? Yeah, use Google Events, right?
Okay.
All of a sudden, it becomes, use more Google. You know, somebody in the chat room is saying, and I think he's right, Arthur D. says, what about Tumblr?
Tumblr.
T-U-M-B-L-R. I don't know if Tumblr is a good place for group sharing. People can submit to your Tumble log, but you'd have to approve them, and then it would be available in their Tumble log. I'm not sure that's quite the right place for it.
Okay.
How old are what reunion year is it?
It's actually an old job that I had, and it was 20 years ago, and they're all getting together.
So they're going to be older people?
Yes. And they're not really savvy as far.
Yeah, Tumblr's are probably the wrong way to go. They'll be more comfortable with Yahoo. They might be more comfortable with Google. Google Events is kind of cool. Have you done the invitations yet?
Not yet. I'm trying to figure out the process of having to do all this.
Well, then that might be a good way to do it, is to create the event on Google Events, Google Plus Events, because that photo sharing is a part of that. It's built in.
Okay. And then I guess you would probably just mark that as a public
No, you can have. That's one of the beauties of this. You can have it only be people who invited and accepted the event.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I think what you want is Plus Events. So if you go to your Google Plus page and you look on the menu on the left, you'll see Events. You can create an event. It has invitations, and part of one of the features of this is guests can add photos, and that means that once they've accepted the event and they show up, then photos will be posted to an event photo pool that everybody can see. That's, you know what, that's probably the easiest way to do it.
Oh, okay. And then, again, probably pictures are at least 5 gigs.
Oh, yeah. I don't think Google limits that.
Okay. That sounds good.
Here's a chance to take advantage of Google's desire to make this be a huge success. Now you got something. As long as Google really wants people to use Google Plus, take advantage of that and use this. Google Events is free. It's very nicely done. They can have different themes to your event. You have event options. You have 3 options in basic and many more in advanced. You can even have a Google Plus Hangout with this event. You can say guests can invite other people if you want to extend the guest list. Guests can add photos. That's really what you want. That's actually a good way to do it.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Hour 3 of the Tech Guy Show.
If you have a question about computers or the internet, cell phones or home theater, any of that jazz, you give me a ring. 8888-ASK-LEO. The website is techguylabs.com. Our next call from Manhattan Beach. David on the line. Hi, David. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo, how are you today?
I'm well. How are you?
Fantastic. Listen, I'm headed down to Google I.O. next week, and I want to get there in style, and I need your help.
You're a Google developer?
No, my brand is going into the mobile space for the first time ever, and I'm going down there for the first time. Very excited.
How exciting. What's your brand?
It's called Ugly Doll. And Ugly Doll is kind of like, it's toys, it's books. It's been a big character brand for 12 years.
Wait, Heather, you know Ugly Doll? Heather Heyman?
Yeah, I feel like there must be one around here somewhere. They're really funny little
Ugly Doll.
Things.
Are they like trolls?
No, they're not ugly at all. They're kind of like us, Leo. You know, they're interesting.
They're normal looking.
They're cute ugly. Ugly cute.
Uglydolls.com, right. Is that the place?
Uglydolls.com, that's me. And I'm very excited about going down to I.O. And I need to look like I know what I'm
Heather's talking. All excited.
I love them.
Heather loves your ugly dolls.
Wow, thank you very much.
So is it, is it like a chick thing, Heather? What is the deal?
I think it's a kid thing. You know, you just have to have that part of your brain.
You have plushes. You have action figures. I like them. You know what? I do like them. I want an ugly doll. This is great. So you're putting this brand. Well, now you're online now. I mean, you have an online store.
Sure. Yeah. Well, we're online, but specifically, I really want to get to know anyone who's working on Google Glass. I'm part of the Explorer program, and
you want ugly doll on Google Glass?
Oh, someday they've got to be walking around town with you. They're going to be your personal ugly assistant. So I'm all about that, and I'm really excited to go.
But I like this idea. So the glass, which kind of is a personal assistant, doesn't have any personality. If it were a little ugly doll appearing in the corner of your eye there saying, "Hey, Leo, you're missing your appointment. Get the heck over there." That would be cool.
Leo, you just auditioned for the first ugly doll. That's absolutely fantastic.
Hey, knock it off. I'm working here.
So that's a good idea. So you're going to Google I.O. You went last year. You must be if you're in the Explorer program.
No, it was the If I Had Glass.
Oh, you won on that one.
That's right.
Oh.
For some reason they chose me. I was one of the 8,000 people.
What was your tweet?
I did it on Google Plus. It was, it's just through my screen name, and I just explained how, like, I would grow as an artist and how I would just love to show our fans what I'm actually working on as I'm working on it through That's Google neat. Glass, and and I got one.
Now, David, did you create these little guys?
My wife and I did, yeah, about 12 years ago. Yeah.
So you did it as drawings at first, and now you have apparel, you have games, you even got hats.
We've even got hats. Yeah, it all started from a love letter to my wife. She had to move away to Korea, I wrote a love letter to her, and I signed it with an ugly doll character, and she sewed that into a gift for me, and then we kind of just turned it into a deal. And now, you know, hey, 12 years ago, Leo, I had a flip phone and a beeper, and thanks to you, I've got HTC in one hand, but the other hand's empty, and I got to ask you about the Galaxy S4. I keep hearing about how there's the AT&T branded version or the you know, the USA version has certain guts in it, and then if you get the international version, it's going to be faster. But then I thought,
it's not appreciably faster. So I got the international version. So the main reason I got the international version is because I'm nuts, but also because it is the only 8-core. So I thought, well, maybe it'll be faster, but also the international version is unlocked, so I can use this on any carrier. You know, I open the back up and I could pop in another SIM card. So it's good for traveling. But what you lose is because they put the 8-core processor in here, the Exynos, you don't get LTE.
Oh, right. That's right.
So it is a GSM phone, so you can only use it on AT&T or T-Mobile. My experience putting a SIM from both, it works fine. I am using T-Mobile because, at least in my neck of the woods, their HSPA Plus is pretty much as fast as the LTE from Verizon and AT&T. So I'm pretty happy with the speed. Certainly, it's 8 megabits down, 3 megabits up. It's fast enough. So that's the difference. But it's fully unlocked. Now, if you get it from AT&T, they say if you're a customer in good standing, we'll unlock your phone for you if you're going to travel.
Oh, excellent. Wow, I did not know that. Okay, yeah. So I can actually unlock that if I want to travel.
Yeah.
Okay. So
now, you said you already have an HTC One.
I have an HTC One, yeah, but I've got to have the Galaxy S4 with me also. The HTC One doesn't have a replaceable battery, so that one conks out. I just switched the SIM over to the other.
That's exactly right. I bought a Mophie case for the HTC One, but I bought 4 batteries for the Galaxy S4.
See what you've done to me, Leo? Before, I had one phone with a cord attached to it, and now I'm going to go with the holster of phones.
I love the HTC One. I mean, it's a gorgeous build. The quality is great. The screen is marginally better. It's not as big, but it's maybe marginally better. The negative on the HTC One is HTC, unfortunately, has really customized it with their Sense. And there's some things I'm used to doing on an Android phone. So I feel like HTC oversimplified it, over-customized it. It's beautiful.
I do like the HTC One, but you can't get Google Plus on your Blink feed, I think. The thing that scrolls up and down on that first page.
There's an example. You know, that Blink feed, I don't even use. I rooted my HTC One almost right away and changed things around because I couldn't take what HTC had done with it.
See, and you're missing out, Leo, because we're friends on Google Plus. You would have seen the ugly dolls in your feed, and now,
Now, wait a minute. Am I following you on Google Plus?
This is history. This is the first time I've actually had a real world conversation with my Google Plus friends.
What's your Google Plus name?
It's just my real name. Can I say that on the air? Is it okay?
Well, it's okay with me if it's okay with you.
David Horvath, and I've got the little check mark next to me, and then and I think that means that you've circled me at some point.
I did circle you. I know who you are. Oh no, you know what? The check mark means you're verified. But oh yeah, and I put you. Look at the circle I put you in, David. This is not a setup. I put you in my fun and interesting circle.
Oh, fantastic! Fun and interesting. Oh, it's an honor.
So somehow I've managed to figure out who you are. That's great. And look at all these ugly dolls.
I'm gonna move you to a much better circle.
I like Google Plus a lot. People should get me wrong when I say it's a failure. I just don't think it became as popular among the general public as Facebook and Twitter. However, the people who use it are great.
Well, I run the whole company from it. We love the Hangouts. That we've cut down on a lot of travel thanks to the Hangouts.
Cool. That's pretty cool.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, good. I'll see you at Google I.O. I'll be there. It's next Wednesday. We're going to cover the keynote on our podcasts. And Jeff Jarvis and Gina Trapani and I, we host a show called This Week in Google. And we'll all three be at the Google I.O. keynote and then come back and do our This Week in Google, our regular This Week in Google show. So we will cover this heavily. You might want to wait and see before you get your Galaxy S4 to see if Google puts anything interesting under your seat.
Aha, under the seat.
They almost always give away lots of hardware. Last year they gave away the Nexus 4. There's a rumor there might be a new Android phone from Google, perhaps a Motorola Nexus X. So I wouldn't buy a phone until next week there.
Okay, I'm going to take that advice, and I'm going to look under my seat.
All right.
No matter what's there. Thank you for the advice, Leo.
Anytime, David. Great to talk to you, and good luck with Ugly Doll. That is great. UglyDolls.com. And Heather even knew about them. I should have known about them. They're huge, huh? They're big?
Yeah, I feel like I see them everywhere. Especially, I think he started out in Haight Street boutiques. And I just always wanted to buy one. You know, I was at that age where I had friends having kids and blah, blah, blah.
It'd be good for kids. Because it's not pretty. It's ugly. Except they're cute.
They love stuff like that.
I love
the
story.
Worms.
He started. Burgers. He drew one for his wife when she went back to Korea. He drew one on her letter and she sewed one. And it went back. That's so cute.
That's adorable.
Yeah. Well, this is where it's very interesting in the cell phone space. It's moving very, very quickly. We will see a new iPhone probably in the next few months too. No idea what Apple will be doing with that. But boy, they've got to be feeling the heat, the pressure, the breath down their neck from Google right behind them. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo, that's the phone number. Yeah, Google does it. Last year, I was just looking it up. Google I.O. is next week. It's their big developer conference. I think there's 5,000 tickets in there. They sold out in minutes because everybody wants to go. This is the new competition in Silicon Valley. Well, how fast did you sell out your developer conference? Google I.O. sold out in, how many? I can't remember. Was it 20 minutes? Then Apple sold out their developer conference in 2 minutes. So we sold ours out in 12 seconds. We sold ours out before we even put them on sale. That's how fast people want to be developers for us. Well, I think one of the reasons people go to Google I.O. now is the bounty that they come home with. Last year, Google gave away what would have totaled over $1,000 at retail. They gave away a Nexus 7 tablet. They gave away something that actually was supposed to retail for $299, never ended up selling. In fact, maybe is more valuable just because it was such a flop. The Google Q. No, you see, anybody ever hear that? No. It was a ball, a fairly heavy kind of ball that contained electronics that allowed you to share media with a TV. It was a flop. Streaming media device, kind of. They also gave a phone, a smartphone. It was not the Nexus 4. I was mistaken. That came out later in the year. It was just the Samsung Galaxy Nexus. And they gave away a Chromebox, a $329 Chromebox. So it's probably the case that this year you will get, if you go to Google I.O., and the tickets, as I said, are completely sold out, but David will get a phone. Google likes to spiff its developers. That's where the competition is. You create a platform like Google Plus or Android or iOS or OS X or Windows or Facebook. You create a platform and you want people, it's very important that people develop for it. So you really, you know, do what you can to get the developers excited about your particular operating system or platform. Let's go to our next call. Jay is on the line from Providence, North Carolina. Hi, Jay. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, this might be one of the shorter questions of the day, I'm not sure, but are there any domain name suffixes which you would avoid at all costs if you were going to register one and use it for a website?
Yes, XXX. That's a real domain name. I wouldn't use it. You know, it's funny because a lot of the adult industry wants to use this because, and I think this is a good argument, if we all use XXX, if every adult site were XXX, it'd be very easy for parents and others to say, hey, you can't go to XXX domain names. And that would simplify it. Unfortunately, there are a lot of companies like Playboy.com. Playboy.com is not giving up Playboy.com ever, ever, ever in a million years. .com is the one you want. It's always the one you want. The next best one would be .net. And you're seeing as the, because the .coms are, you know, dwindling. Most of the there are no more three-letter.com names available, no more four-letter and very few four-letter.com domains available. So you often have to go to .net. I use .tv for Twit, our website. So in fact, we also have, I think, techguylabs.tv. I think that's not great because I think when we say, for instance, our podcasts are available at twit.tv, a lot of people say twit.tv.com? No. Just there's no .com, just twit.tv. So I would use .com or .net if you can. But if you can't, there's .fm. I have a .fm. I have .am because I'm in radio, right? .tv, those aren't too bad. There is .us. I'm not crazy about there's .name, .info. .biz. I'm not crazy about those. Mostly because if you say, hey, my plumbing business is, you know, is at larrysplumber.biz, I think a lot of times people will think it's .com. So get .com if you can, unless you have to put a lot of weird stuff in. Like I see a lot of times .com addresses with dashes and underscores. No, don't do that. Because then you have to say the-techguy-com. That's crazy. Crazy talk. What are you thinking of?
Well, I'm just looking mostly at just registering in case one day I could resell them because I don't envision having a lot of websites and running them myself.
Well, that's a different. Now, if you're going to do domain name squatting, that is acquiring addresses on the hopes that somebody will come and buy them, then you want premium addresses. People aren't going to pay for, you know, a .info. There's no money in that. So if that's your plan, yeah, I would absolutely, you know, try to get the .coms and .nets. But as I said, between domain name squatters and actual domain name owners, there's not much left at .com. It's all taken. I would love Leo.com. Not going to get it. It's actually, I think, owned. It was owned by the Royal Bank of Canada, and then I let it slip. I wasn't paying attention, and somebody else got it. But I am proud of myself because when we named our kids, when they were born, actually I can't take credit for that because my daughter's 21. She was born in 92. I didn't know anything about domain names in 92. and my son was born in 94. Even then I probably didn't, but some years later before the names disappeared, I got both of their names .com. And they don't want them. They don't need, you know, I mentioned them. I think they've probably forgotten I did it. I got them for 10 years, then renewed for another 10 years, and I'll probably keep doing that because someday they may want them. And then when Henry says, hey, I wish I could get henrylaporte.com, I say, well, I wonder who has it. Oh, me. Oh, I do. Would you like it? $100,000. You could pay me back for college. Maybe by then he could afford it. Kyle in Irvine, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Kyle.
Hey, Leo.
Welcome. What can I do for you?
Well, I'm looking to modernize my company. I want to get a tablet. Right now I'm a general contractor. I'm going from hard copy paper, transferring on my desktop, and I'm trying to get somewhere I can just, in the field, send email straight out and simplify. For my smartphone, I got the Casio Commando because I can just beat the tar out of it. But I'm wondering, should I get, you know, a specialized hardened version, or should I look into some more regular and do a case?
Well, first thing to look is which tablet platform, and there are really only two, maybe three. You've got Windows. Actually, Windows might be a good choice. Windows, iOS, or Android. Which tablet platform has the software you'd like to use? I imagine you want to use estimating software, invoicing software. You might want to use some design. You do design build. You might some design software. You know, look for the software that will give you the tools that you need and find out what platform. This is the same advice we gave for years when people said Mac or PC. Well, figure out which has the software you want.
Right.
In your case, I think a Windows tablet, I would bet you that the most of the software you want is actually on Windows.
All right. So maybe go shop software, find out what I like and see what
exactly.
They recommend. Work it
out. And don't worry about ruggedized at that point. Then get a ruggedized case. There are a number of companies like Ballistic that make really great cases. You could throw the thing across the room.
Cool. Yeah. I'll check it out.
Hey,
appreciate
thanks for the call. Thanks for calling. I appreciate it. Good luck. You know, I was at a concert last night, as you were too, Heather, and there was a guy. I'm standing in the fourth row of the Flaming Lips, really excited because I love this band and I'm very close. Guy pushed his way, shoved his way forward right in front of me. Fortunately, he was short, was wearing a hat. And then he lifts an iPad up and starts taking pictures. I could have killed him! Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'll tell you about my revenge next. I was actually crying when he sang this last night. Wayne Coyne in the Flaming Lips. I really was. Tears were streaming down my face. Oh, it was a beautiful moment. It was fun. But I'm at this concert but watching this, and my tears are running down, and the guy lifts up his iPad to take a picture right in front of me. This do not bring iPads to concerts, folks. They're too big. I understand. I took some cell phone pictures. Even that's not desirable. I did, but the iPad. No, come on. A 10-inch screen. And so he turns it around to take a picture of him and his girlfriend's show. Yeah, you see, we're right in the front here, and I'm right behind him. So I made a pretty bad face right behind. It's called photobombing. Have you seen that? Where people photobomb. Have you seen that?
Oh, yeah. Kevin Spacey's the master, they say.
Kevin Spacey is a photobomber?
He will jump. He did it, I guess he was out jogging in New York and someone was taking a picture by some fountain. He's just like there in the background and they're like, holy crap.
You're a tourist and you get a picture and you get home and there is Kevin Spacey behind you making a face and you didn't even know it. Here's one. Here's a Kevin Spacey photobomb. I think they knew it, though. That's pretty cute. I like Kevin.
Yeah,
he's kind of a geek, you know. Did you know that about him?
I guess I didn't.
No, he's really into into technology. And there he is in Central Park. He's it's like, who is that? There's a guy in my picture.
That's Academy Award-winning actor Kevin Spacey.
What? No, it was some guy running down this.
No, I'm sorry. That's what he does. He's strange that way.
Photobombing is fun. Do it whenever you get a chance, in my opinion. Who should I talk to next, Heather?
Oh, I want to talk to Damien. I mean, I want you to. And that RSM is for Rancho Santa Margarita.
Thank you for telling me, because I would say Damien in RSM, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Damien.
Hi. I listen to you every weekend. I'm 10 years old, and I have a question about my iPhone 4S.
Okay.
I bought this. It's pretty new, just 6 months. My battery gets sucked up really, really fast.
Yeah.
It lasts around 3 hours only.
Yeah, isn't that terrible? Do you play with it a lot, Damien?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, see, the more you play with it, the sooner it will die.
And, another thing was that, I was using it a lot last night. And it started heating up a little, and I noticed my screen just crashed 2 times. It just turned off. The app came up, and then after 5 minutes, it started back up again. Is there anything you think is wrong with the software or anything?
Yeah, I would get mom or dad to take you back to the Apple store. Is there an Apple store near you?
Just 20 minutes away.
Is that where you got it?
I actually bought it from the Sprint store.
I would say take it back to the Sprint store, but I don't know if you'll get much. Well, I guess you have to. This is, by the way, why my recommendation generally is to get this stuff at the Apple store. Because you could take it to the Apple store, say it's crashing, and they will just say, yeah, here's a different one. Especially if you go in there. The battery life may not be unusual. You know, I've noticed this when I get a new phone and I'm so excited about it and I play with it, you know, like I play games and it's on all the time. The screen really depletes the battery, Damien. So it's just, it probably would get better as you get used to having it. An iPhone 4 should go about 10 hours with normal use.
Yeah.
So give it, make sure it's charged all the way.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, if you're going to get, if you leave it on all the time, 3 hours, but if you, you know, use it normally, you make some calls, you play a game, you put it away like that. Another thing you could do, and this is a good tip from Feld in our chat room, is make sure you turn the brightness down a little bit, because the brighter the screen, the more it uses battery.
Okay, and I heard that turning off your push notifications on email and your apps too, does that help?
Yes, it does. Anything that uses the radios is going to use it more. So one thing you can do is you can say, just check my mail manually. Now, that means when you want to get mail, you'll have to pull to refresh, but that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
That'll save you. The other thing is it can also depend on where you are. For instance, I have an AT&T phone that dies very fast, and it's my thinking that it dies fast because we don't have great signal, and so it's always trying to get the signal. And
in my area, Sprint, the reception is not that great. They don't have many towers in this area, so I guess that sucks up the battery a little bit.
Absolutely. That could very well be the whole point, the whole reason. You might also want to make sure that you set the screen off time to the short time. Don't make it 10 minutes, right? Make it 30 seconds or 15 seconds.
Yeah.
They're telling me in the chat room, and I didn't know this, even if you bought it at the Sprint store, you can still bring it to the Genius Bar at the Apple store. Apple will stand by it. So
yeah,
if you
I've done that before.
Okay, good. So yeah, so if you bring it into them and you say, "Hey, this is rebooted on me twice." That's overheating.
Yeah.
So there's something wrong with it. They should just swap it out.
So I noticed that with my MacBook Air, I was having a problem with that. They would only send it in for repair. With an iPhone, will they just replace it?
That's right. A phone, they typically will replace it as opposed to sending it in for repair.
Okay, that's great.
Hey, it's great to talk to you. How come you have a smartphone when you're are you in fourth grade or fifth grade?
Fourth grade.
Yeah. Do you find a lot of the other kids have smartphones in fourth grade?
Yeah, actually they do. But a lot of people don't have the data service.
Right. You know what I found? Somebody was telling me this. They got a smartphone for their kid, and then, you know, he did something wrong, and they took it away, and they realized this is not a punishment for him. We can't reach him. We don't know where he is. This is a punishment for us. It's for your parents that you have the phone. It's a safety thing.
Yeah.
I think it's a great thing.
Okay, well, thank you for your help.
All right, Damien, bring it into the Apple store and tell them what happened. Tell them Leo said they'd replace it. Like, that'll help. Oh, you know Leo? Oh, I'm sorry. We don't like him. The Gizwiz is coming up in just a little bit. Our gadget guru, Dick DiBartolo. Now, see, his website is gizwiz.biz, and I have to kind of say that a few times. It's not .com, it's .biz, gizwiz.biz. Bob in Roner Park, just up the road a piece. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Leo.
Good to talk to you.
I'm watching you right now on my Roku.
Oh, you can come down. I'm only a few miles away. You can watch us in person.
That sounds great.
Yeah. We're looking for people to come watch Heather. I want Heather to have her fan club sitting in a circle around her, just like I have people here. We want people sitting around Heather looking at driver nuts. What can I what can I do for you?
Well, I've got a problem with this HP printer that I had that's 3 years old, and it just stopped working.
Uh-oh.
So I thought it was, you know, the wireless signature was dead, so I bought a new one. Having the same problem.
Really? So what happens?
Well, it says, it gives me an error, call to driver package install, returned error 1627.
So that sounds like a driver issue, a software issue, and that would make sense. You'd replace the hardware and it still happens. It's got to be software, right?
That's what I figured. So yeah. 2 hours and 45 minutes, I chatted with HP. They couldn't figure it out. They take me to some bogus website that says I've got, you know, all these viruses and problems and registry errors.
Was it HP? Did you call them?
Yeah.
And they sent you to a site like that?
Yeah. I couldn't believe it. I did reviews on this software, and it was pokey to be the best.
Oh my gosh, that's terrible. I am underwhelmed. Let's talk about it when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That's terrible. What horrible, horrible customer support. Hey, our show today brought to you by 99 Designs. I'm a fan. I got to tell you a little bit about 99 Designs. They bring together great graphic designers, hundreds of them, with people who are looking for graphic design work. It's a great way for the graphic designers to get work, a great way for you to find a designer who can do what you need. More than 210,000 graphic designers worldwide are available to work on your project. 99 Designs has great customer support, 24/7, phone, email, and chat. You can get a complimentary design consultation with their San Francisco design team if you're looking for branding. There's a 100% money-back guarantee, and the price is right. So what happens is you go to 99 Designs, you tell them what you need, and then dozens of designers from the 99 Designs community will submit design ideas for you. You can talk with them, you can interact, you can refine the design, then you pick the one you want, and then you pay. It's a really great deal. That's how we did our T-shirt, which is almost, I'll tell you about the T-shirt in a little bit, but last chance to get that T-shirt. So prices, like logo design starts at $299. Web design starts at $599. Digital marketing collateral like landing pages, Facebook cover design, banner ads, infographics start at $199. So it may not just be big businesses. Maybe you have a brand and you want it like Ugly Doll and you want to have a really great looking page. This is a great way to do it. Print marketing, collateral, brochures, flyers, menus, labels, greeting cards, product design start at $199. Apparel design, like our T-shirt, $199. I like this. In fact, we're working with them. This is our next thing. Mobile app design, $599. That's where it starts. So you can start right now. Visit 99designs.com/techguy, and they'll give you a $99 power pack of services free. Power Pack gives you more designer time and attention. 99 Designs will bold, highlight, and feature your design in their marketplace, so you get nearly twice as many specs. You can also call 800-513-1678. That's the number for Twit listeners only. 800-513-1678 or 99designs.com/techguy. Love 99 Designs. Let me show you the T-shirt. It's a T-E-E. spring.com/twit. And we did, as you remember, we got a bunch of designs from our 99 Design designers, and we picked this one, which I love. In fact, there's only a day and 15 hours left to buy it. TWEspring.com/twit, $15. And we make a little money on it, which is nice. A designer makes a little money on it. Works out great. 99designs.com/techguy. Here he is. He's my IT guy. Dick DiBartolo, he's the giz whiz.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Whenever
exactly.
Anything goes wrong here at the Twit Brick House, Dick just flies out and fixes it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Did you plug it in?
Reboot?
Did you reboot? Okay. Oh, you did that?
Maybe you can help this guy, Bob, in Roner Park. He's got an HP printer problem. Any suggestions?
Did you plug it in? Did you reboot it?
Dick is Mad Magazine's maddest writer. And we call him the Gizwiz because he's a gadget hound, and he brings us a gadget every week. What do you got?
Well, you know what? I just came back from the... I was in San Francisco for 3 hours for a change of planes.
And you didn't visit?
Well, 3 hours, it's a little tight.
Yeah, it takes an hour just to get here, yeah.
Yeah, and I was out at the National Hardware Show.
That was in Vegas.
In Vegas, exactly. And, you know, a lot of... I'll be doing stuff for the next couple of weeks. A lot of people who really put their heart and soul and probably their life savings in gadgets that you think, sir, I hope to God you're going to make it with this.
Does the world really need a new design hammer? You know,
it's so funny. You said that there was a man with a hammer. He said, it looks like a hammer, but now it opens up and it's a hex wrench. But now I stretch it out and now it's a crowbar.
No.
Yeah. I mean, it was well designed, but oh, my word.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, something a little more down to earth is from General Tools, and you probably know the name because they're
because I am a General Tool.
Yes, that too.
That's why that name rings a bell.
Exactly.
You've called me that many times.
I have. Well, it's on your stationery, so it's hard not to, you know. It doesn't say CEO. It just says
No, you used to say Chief Twit. Now it says General Tool.
General Tool. they started out making tools only for the hobby market, and then they made all sorts of power tools and the video borescope and stuff. But this year they introduced a little cordless precision screwdriver for many applications, like repairing computers and electronics. So it's a little motor-driven guy, runs at 100 RPM. It comes with slotted Phillips and Torx bits. Super bright LED light built in there also. So when you're working on that chassis and it's dark, you can have an LED light. It's going to be about $35. I only saw it on one place on Amazon, and for some bizarre reason, they have it at $50. So just be aware. The list, don't pay that much. General Tools on their own website has it for $34.95. And there's also, if you don't need a motor-driven, small mini screwdriver, they make an LED version, manual version, that's under $15. And it's General Tools, and it's model 502, replacing the 500 model that is still featured on Amazon.
I'm surprised, you know, because General Tools is also quite famous for their moisture sensors. I'm surprised you didn't talk about that.
They are not only that, but the guy, the PR guy said, you know, I was watching you one of your podcasts, and you like trains. The owner of General Tools has one half of the floor of his entire building with model trains, hundreds of them.
What?
Dennis and I went down, and not only, it's not like you set up trains. You pick an area, if you're a real hobbyist, you pick an area of the country, and you rebuild that area of the country and all the trains.
Wow.
And that's the kind of model person he is.
Yeah, wow, that's neat. Well, join Dick DiBartolo on his website, gizwiz.biz, for the What the Heck Is It contest, a chance to win a Mad Magazine autograph by this guy. He also does the Giz Fizz right after the radio show on our Twit Podcast Network and the Gizwiz program every Tuesday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern time at twit.tv.
Yes.
Thank you, Dick.
Hardware stuff on Tuesday.
More hardware, yes. Tuesday. Oh,
yes.
That'll get him pouring in. Can't wait. We were talking to Bob in Rohnert Park, California, about his HP printer. Sorry to put you on hold there. We had to get the gizwiz in, Bob. But I also was spending that time thinking. And I, first of all, am a little perturbed that HP, when you call them for tech support, a completely legitimate thing to do, kind of foisted you off on this registry cleaning site. That's not right, and that's not the problem. Did you try uninstalling the drivers that were installed for that printer?
Yes.
And you installed fresh ones from the HP site?
Yes.
And it still didn't fix it. Did you get the same error?
Yep. It goes to like 103 and crashes right after the first one.
Very interesting. Sometimes installing drivers fully requires more than just deleting it from the device manager. Did you run an uninstaller program?
Yes.
Oh. I could see why HP decided to palm you off on something completely unrelated. Because this is a puzzle. My expectation is that there's a file that probably the spooler file that the printer needs that is locked. And drivers software when it runs into this doesn't necessarily handle it well. It should say, hey, I can't write to this file. Could you unlock it? But my suspicion is it's just crashing. It's like, I'm dying. And that's the error message kind of implied that. Have you tried it in safe mode?
I have Windows 8. I don't know how to get it into safe mode.
Yeah, I think it's the same as in previous versions of Windows. Safe mode's always a good thing to try. Reboot, hold down the shift key when you're rebooting. That's the more modern way of doing it. We used to press F8. And you get the safe mode boot menu. I would suggest seeing if it'll run in safe mode. And it may be, the other problem is make sure those drivers are Windows 8 compatible. Finally, and this is a good suggestion from Dr. Wiggs in our chat room, create a new, just, this is a diagnostic. It's not something you're going to do on a long-term basis, but create a new user in Windows 8 and try it from there. See if that will work. Web0452 says try it in compatibility mode. I love the chat room. Lots of good suggestions. We'll put most of these in our website, techguylabs.com. You can also visit the chat room if you go to techguylabs.com. How do you get in safe mode in Windows 8? That's a good question. They say it's not the same way. Thank you. That's the one thing that hasn't changed since Windows 95. And they decided to change it. All right, we're going to have to figure that out. Chat room, great place to go. Our website as well. We'll have additional information. TechGuyLabs.com. And it may be there's a Windows 8 compatibility issue. But again, if you call tech support and they foist you off on a site that says, make your Windows run faster with registry cleaner, I don't buy it. Bert's giving me a link in our chat room. We'll put this in the show notes, redmondpie.com, how to boot into Windows 8 safe mode. Can't believe we have to write an article. Oh, by the way, we've decided just randomly to change something that is probably the most useful thing you'll ever do in Windows. I would make sure, I think you might have been calling it not a real HP site. I would make sure to call that 800 number on the HP website, by the way. Very important to get the right people. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.